Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Time Out with Maverick and Novak. And today we are going to be covering the December 1st edition of Monday Night Raw, all the way back in 1997 as we hop in the TARDIS. And once again, I am joined by the oh-so-lovely and the Tom to my Jerry, Tony Novak. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. I just had some Subway, so I'm very well nourished and very ready to cover this. I got all the energy I need, man.
That's good to hear. I woke up about 15 minutes ago, and I haven't had a chance to eat yet. I'm quite hungry, so yeah, we are going to be boogieing on this. And I'm glad that you're all fed up, and we are going to, like I said, we're going to be covering December 1st edition. This is the go-home edition of Monday Night Raw to In Your House, D-Generation X. And before we get started with the review, we are just going to start off with a couple of notes. And this is all coming from the Wrestling Observer. One of the biggest headlines that is going to be happening around this time in the year of our Lord, 1997, Bret Hart was scheduled to make an appearance off TSN's Off the Record show this week to make his first public statement since the Montreal Screwjob. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's like, I can't really think on what else to say about this. Because we've covered it so much in the last couple of episodes, it's just like, oh, I'm sick of talking about it. But Vince McMahon got himself booked on the show the next night so that he could have a rebuttal to anything that Bret said. When Bret found out that Vince was booked on the show the next night, he canceled his appearance. He just didn't want anything to do with it. And also, like, you know, I can kind of see where Bret's coming from in a way, like, you know, yes, it is nice to get your voice out there. But if you're just going to have the guy who screwed you over jump onto the show the next day and just be like, oh, yeah, none of that's true.
It's a lot of publicity, man, like, well, more so for Vince, right?
Well, and that's just it, right? Like, it's a hell of a move by Vince to go and find out that information and be like, well, goddamn, pal, I'm going to go on there next night and just make fun of him. Ha ha.
You just activated my trap card.
No kidding. Exactly. There's like a gigantic battle of Yu-Gi-Oh going on. And just, oh, God, I'm really hoping that Bret can pull out a magic card to save him. But at this point, yeah. And unfortunately, going along with that, speaking of the Harts, Owen Hart and Davey Boy Smith are both currently locked into their WWF contracts. Both of them are said to be one-sided, so that they could quit the company now, or else they wouldn't be able to wrestle for the next 4 years like anywhere else. It's kind of interesting. I don't know, like, the whole backstory behind it, but I do know that Davey Boy Smith is going to be jumping to WCW at some point, so it's going to be interesting to see how they get around all of that. Smith is having knee surgery this week, and, Shawn Michaels called it a fake knee injury, and I think we covered that, actually, on one of the episodes that we reviewed. And, well, as for Jim Neidhart, he was never under contract with WWF, and he can literally leave at any time. But WCW apparently isn't interested in him. It's so weird. Hey, you're not under contract, but you want to come back for a bit so we can make fun of you and kick the shit out of you?
That's what I was going to say. What the hell? So all that stuff he did that was just like voluntary one night appearance kind of thing. It wasn't like because he was under contract and had to do it kind of thing.
As far as I know, like from what I'm reading right here, like from what Meltzer is saying, like, and again, take everything with a grain of salt with what Meltzer says. Like, he is not gospel.
Fuck Dave Meltzer.
Yeah, there's a lot better news sources out there. And, okay, so I will just end up with a couple of things over on the other side. WCW at an EC. Well, first we'll jump over to ECW because it does relate to WCW, but an ECW show, the fans chanted "You sold out" at New Jack due to an internet rumors that he was going to jump to WCW. New Jack claims that WCW made him an offer and he turned it down. WCW denies that they even ever made him an offer. So it's like, don't really understand where this is coming from. Either way, he's not going to WCW. So, okay, before we started recording here, I said to Novak, I couldn't remember if New Jack actually did wind up going to WCW. And if he did, it was very, very brief. Yeah, apparently that wasn't even the case. So, but WCW was also denied making an offer to Taz when Dave knows for a fact that they did. Again, take it with a grain of salt. At this point in time, I can't really see that happening. Like, yes, you do have a lot of smaller guys on the roster, like Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, those guys, but I don't know. I don't want to sound mean or anything, but I just think Taz was a little quote unquote too small for WCW's liking, and especially with guys like Kevin Nash running around and like calling everybody vanilla midgets, apparently. He denies that, but it's just a funny story to tell.
What a time in the business.
It is absolutely hilarious. With the there were talks about a new show called Thunder being debuting pretty quick, and it looks like it's going to be in January. WCW plans to cancel its Saturday morning main event show along with WCW Sunday Pro Show. I totally forgot about that. Nothing important ever happened on either of them. So either way, it's not really a big loss. Like, you know, they're just kind of filler shows like a Metal or like Jacked or Velocity, and maybe have like the odd good match like that Velocity. What was it? Chris Benoit versus, who the hell is that? Now I'm going to kick myself in the ass because it was a solid match. And I can't remember who the hell it was. Somebody in the comments, let me know if anybody does listen to this, because I'd love to know. Ric Flair signed a new 3-year deal with WCW this week. And so he's with them until he turns 52. It's just so funny to think like Ric Flair was that old in 1997. And like, oh my God, because what, he's 49 here then. Yeah. So that's, it's so funny to think that. And then he wrestled for another decade pretty much afterwards. And Hogan's contract is up at the end of the year. I know it's not really anything, but let's just go with that. End it on a good note. But will that be the case? I'm going to put money on no, personally. Anyway, you have anything to add, Novak, or?
Not so much on like contracts and stuff, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know too much about that stuff, you know, like good for them. Good for Hogan. I'm sure he'll be financially set as far as 1997 goes.
No, of course. And it's just like, it's just weird to think if Hogan actually just left wrestling in 1997, we wouldn't have gotten the finger poke of doom.
God. Imagine that, yeah.
My God. Anyway, we'll get to that when we get to it, sadly enough. So we are going to start our recap of Monday Night Raw. I, again, have absolutely no idea where this edition comes from. I apologize. I'm terrible for that. I'm going to start making an effort to do that. I feel like it's important. And I feel like I owe it to our fans. Anyway, Raw opens up with a video package of New Age Outlaws winning tag team championships. Just a quick little recap. We just see all of that. And here we go again. We're going to end the controversy right now. You make the call. I don't know. What do you think?
About which part? Sorry.
How they're going to show the video packet, or like all the video recap from Survivor Series 1997. So the fans sitting at home can make the call on who was in the wrong, Bret Hart or Vince McMahon.
They're just begging for it, man. People to just like the way they present it, you know, like just trying to make Bret look like the asshole. But again, like Vince not being able to see that his screw job promo made him look like the asshole, so him pulling the fans probably wasn't a good idea.
Like, it's like you're hanging up a picture, right? Like a nice frame picture, and got like a little finishing nail. You just need to put in there. You find the stud, and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna hang this picture up. But then you take a sledgehammer to it. Like, oh my god. Like, stop, just enough. I get it. He left. He wanted more money. And it's so funny.
Beating it to death, yeah.
Oh, God. I'm going to be so glad when we don't have to talk about it anymore. And I honestly believe, I think it's after DX or shortly after, we're starting to slow down on it and then
finally moving on.
Thank God. That's everybody, like, honestly, everybody just needed to take Else's advice, like, I don't know how many years prior, and just let it go.
With the fact that Shamrock is next in line for the title shot, you almost forget it with how much they talk about Britt.
I would much rather see Ken Shamrock just like killing people instead of, hey, let's recap the Montreal Screwjob. Like, oh, God.
Anyway, with the tag titles, got a highlight of the sweet match that we enjoyed talking about on the last episode. Freaking Outlaws. And then in the promo, the Outlaws said that the LOD wasn't even like in the building, correct? But then when LOD came out, the crowd freaking erupted.
Yes, that was hilarious. And I liked LOD as a kid. I thought they were cool looking, like the big shoulder pads and the fucking face paint and even the very weird haircuts, but it was just like, man, like these guys look rad, like, oh man. But yeah, they just put over the fact that they won the tag team championships. It makes fun of the fact that LOD are old and they have no chance of getting the belts back. And yeah, like when they rush the ring, like you said, big pop for it.
Nice quick segment. And one thing I thought was funny out of it was the cameraman jumping out of his pants when LOD stormed the ring. Scared to death of getting in the way, like, God forbid.
That was good. I like when people do small things like that, like it not necessarily taking away from what's happening, but like there's that one referee, and with everything that's going on right now, I don't want like people to like hate on us or anything, but it's the black referee that's on WWE right now. His facial expressions are hilarious when things are happening. And I love, like, there are times when I'm watching him just to see what his reaction is. But like when camera guys have to like jump out of the way or something and they do something like comical, I like things like that. It's funny. And yeah, same thing that goes for here. And Animal gets on the mic, starts yelling, and says that they'll get their hands on the New Age Outlaws before in your house, DX. So perhaps we'll see the Legion of Doom beforehand, before the end of the night.
Oh, yes. And then up next here, your favorite, Sunny. My
absolute favorite. Like, oh my God, I wrote, and like, again, I took like five lines and I just wrote "Good God, Sunny" with a whole bunch of hearts around it, because I, oh man. When I was, like, I'm not even kidding, man. When I was 7, I had the biggest crush on her. Like, my face would just go beet red on the other side of the screen. She's not even in front of me, but it's like, oh, my God, she's so pretty. Like, oh, my, man. And, yeah, I had to put down here, stunning as always. And
in her entrance, you see when she came out, she gave a little kid a kiss on the cheek, and he just melted in his chair.
Yep, he really did. And, little shit, little bastard. Yeah,
horny little fuck.
No, I wanted that to be me, damn it. But, yeah, Sunny is out here. She is going to be the special ring announcer. And, like, I love Sunny. It's just, it's such a shame right now just to see her kind of, like, bumbling around and doing, like, whatever. And unfortunately, we already missed, like, her greatest run where she managed 3 consecutive tag team champions. Like, she's historic for that. That is something that she will always be remembered for. And, like, I'm a little pissed off that we missed that. And I think, honestly, that we together, you and I, Novak, we honestly might just, like, going forward with, like, certain projects and stuff like that, I think we might get to a point where we just talk about certain wrestlers and just maybe an hour just talking and saying what our opinions are, what their greatest matches were, what their not so greatest matches were, like
good moments and shit.
Yeah. So I think, I think that's something that's going to be coming up in the future. Obviously Tony and I will talk about that a little bit more with a little bit more content that we'll be bringing to you guys. But circling back and getting off that tangent, Sunny is the ring announcer for Taka versus Aguila. Yes, Aguila. I don't know why I had a hard time pronouncing that. It was a solid match. They did a lot, and I just found myself watching most of it. The only thing that I had really noteworthy on here that I just, like, popped for was Aguila gets backdropped outside of the ring, but saves himself by, like, handspring vaulting off of the apron and onto his feet. I'm like, you're incredible. And then, God.
Yeah, from this match, one thing I noticed, like, right off the hop, I got a kick out of it, freaking JR, where he's like, with these two athletic young men, you know, it probably won't be on the mat if they have something to say about it. And right off the hop, you see a rocking horse submission, you see the surfboard stretch, you see some deadly submission wrestling while in the midst of JR saying, won't be on the mat.
it was hilarious hearing that, but it was also just very funny watching those two moves be like the first moves of the match.
Very much so.
I can't remember what the first one was, but then, yeah, just going into a Mexican surfboard, I'm like, wait, what? This is the second move of the match. What's happening? You're going for submissions already? I mean,
yeah, two of the most complicated submission holds being thrown out right away, like in the midst of JR saying that this is not what this match will be about. Just got to, like, kick out of that.
It's also funny, too, considering that Daniel Bryan was really good for the Mexican surfboard. So, like, I don't ever remember him using a Mexican surfboard in, like, the first or second move in a match. It's so funny to see that. Do you know who Aguila is going to eventually become?
I do not.
Aguila will eventually become S.A. Rios.
No shit.
Yeah, and it was so funny, too, because I was looking at his body and I was looking at his tattoos and stuff. I'm like, man, he looks like a body I've seen before. And I was watching a little bit of 2000 Raw, and I saw S.A. Rios, and I'm like, get out of town. And, of course, I hopped on my Google machine and, found out that they were the same person. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. They're both nice. Super flippy and can do cool shit.
Well, good for him. Goddamn.
Yeah, it's sad that his manager eventually will become the more famous of the two, but we'll get to her eventually. Taka wins with a driver. Really good match. And then the camera, of course, pans to Sunny, which I have absolutely zero complaints about. So, yeah. and now we get to a very, very, oof, good God, man. We get to a... Do you want to do this segment?
I feel like we can just talk about it the minimum amount, you know, just because of how bad it is. But yeah, Goldust comes out, ball gig, his hair is pink, he's wearing a metal bra, he's on a leash, Luna Vachon is guiding him to the ring. He's very submissive here, and he looks to be in pain, but he also looks like he's enjoying it, which is very confusing. But yeah, just Luna introducing herself as Goldust's master, I guess.
Mistress? Yeah.
The mistress, there we go, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, and like, the thing that the one thing that I did right on here, Luna walks out with a chain, and it's with Goldust on the other end of it. Carol Baskin. I don't know if that's a correct thing or not. I just remember seeing a very weird engagement photo of a man dressed up in leopard print, and he was on a leash, so it was very strange. Luna cuts a promo about Goldust leaving Terry and puts over the fact that Dusty is fat. Cool. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we get it.
Classic.
Yeah, that one hurts. I even remember Dusty in, like, I think it was an episode of the weekly NWA TNA pay-per-views in like 2003, and it was Brian Christopher, and he was like, "You're a fat old man," and Dusty like is in the ring, and he starts like pretending he's limping, and he's like, oh my God, that hurts so much. I'm like, oh my God, I love you, Dusty. Like, he's like, oh, you called me fat, big deal, like, whatever, I made like millions of dollars and I'm famous, shut up. Goldust is crawling around being a sex slave as Luna continues to ramble. Segment ends with Luna falling on Goldust.
Goldust is trying so hard to be controversial, to be memorable. So one of the first things he thinks of is to be on a leash on TV. And not enough to just be on a leash. He's wearing a metal bra, his hair's pink, you know, the ball gag, like, just went the extra mile to be, you know, androgynous.
Well, I mean, in a way, he was correct, because we will never forget the name Goldust.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Fuck. Oh my God. Oh my God. Jim Cornette. In the midst of all this fucking bullshit, out of nowhere, he's like, I feel like he should do an interview in a body condom.
I have such a love-hate relationship with Cornette. Like, there's some things that it's like, goddamn, Jim, but then there's some things that he does that it's so funny. And,
And I feel like that's a good transition into the next thing here. We see a promo for the next match, which is a Four Corners match with different members.
Whoa. Before that, we get Karate Fighters. Hell yeah. Tito Santana versus Jerry the King Lauder.
I totally skipped that.
Towel after Lawler beats him. Oh my God, Jerry. Like,
I completely skipped that.
Well, I sure as hell didn't, because that was hilarious. And just the I can't remember. Oh, I remember Tito calling Lawler the Burger King, which was pretty funny. And like, they did that frequently, but yeah, it just always popped me. Lawler said another, like, just like, oh my God, why? Like, he said it before, and I can't remember the line, but yeah, the have another burrito, pal, was just like, oh, fuck, Jerry, Jesus.
Man. Just no script for that.
And with that, for the final round of the Karate Fighters tournament, we have got Jerry the King Lawler versus Sonny. And I can't wait for that, because I love me some Sonny.
Yeah, looking forward to that, man.
But now, circling back to what you were going to say.
Where the fuck was it? Oh, yeah, the fucking Four Corners. Where, like, Four Corners matches can either be really good or really bad. And I just thought, like, the majority of it is a lot of lower card people. And I like that Jim Cornette just straight up said that. We get the graphic for the Four Corners match, and he's like, all right, up next, we got what is sure to be a train wreck. We got a Four Corners match. Fucking Jim Cornette just calling it like he sees it.
You know what, though? Like, this is going to sound really mean, but aside from D'Lo Brown, he's not wrong.
Very much so. Like, with lower card people and then a clusterfuck of a match, yeah, Jim Cornette was just like, all right, here comes the train wreck, and, you know, let's get through this together.
Yeah, I didn't really write down too much about this match because there wasn't really all that was memorable. But I did write down one thing here that, like, I don't know. I need confirmation from people, because I think it was Jim Cornette who said, you can get disqualified if you don't accept a tag.
Oh, yeah.
What? I have never heard that before.
Yeah, the main thing you hear out of Four Corners matches is that the good strategy is to stay outside the ring and let people beat each other up, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you don't hear that side of it, right? Like, those kind of rules.
Yeah, it was just, it was really bizarre to hear that, because, like, I have never, ever heard that rule before. Then again, like, I guess if you and I are in a Four Corners match and, like, we are either the face or the heel, we'll find a way to get each other in without having to make those, like, blatant tags. It's like unintentional tags by one guy not paying attention, smack on the back. Oh, okay. Like,
or strategy wise in those matches, you see a lot of people intentionally tag in at opportune times. Eh?
Exactly. And yeah, it was just bizarre hearing that line. I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that, but cool.
Nice to know.
D'Lo punches Recon after trying to tag, and he gets a DVD by chains to be eliminated. Perez counters a counter from D'Lo to eliminate him.
Yeah, it feels like this whole match was leading to a brawl at the end, which it did, but it also led to a pop. So all in all, it could be called successful. They got what they wanted. The crowd wanted a big group of guys to beat the shit out of each other. That's what you got. Four factions just going at it. Boom.
I would have rather just seen this as just a single fall fatal four-way match and then a schmoz at the end.
It was a long way to go, yeah.
Yeah, it just, yeah, it felt, but yeah, Chains, like Novak said, Chains hits a DVD on Perez, and Vega stops the pin, and all hell breaks loose in capital letters. Oh, another.
Good times. And,
yeah, great times. And with that being said, long DX promo putting over the pay-per-view matches that are coming up. Sean is in a wheelchair so that can improve his flexibility. And Hunter twists Sean's leg around. And then afterwards, Sean has his leg, like, or his foot up by his ear. And, like, yeah, it's all silliness. But, like, honestly, I kind of do like it. because it is putting over the fact on how dangerous Ken Shamrock's ankle lock is. Like, yeah. It's putting over that fact. So I do appreciate that. But yeah, just all daft silliness. Hunter puts over the fact that he has a match with Sergeant Slaughter, calls him old, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we've heard it all before. And then we get the recap video of the Montreal screw job. And yeah, they just, yeah.
And then some better highlights. We get highlights of the Intercontinental story with The Rock and Stone Cold. We get a flashback to the Deadly segment with the Beeper 316.
Yes, that was okay. And we now start Warzone. But before we get to that, we are going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be back with you momentarily.
Hello, friends, family, and wrestling fans. Pardon the interruption, but this is Spencer Love, your host of Conversations with Love, right here on the WCSN. Join me twice a week as I sit down for a one-on-one conversation with some of the best of the professional wrestling scene. Tune in every Wednesday and Friday right here on the Win Column Sports Network. Now, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
And we are back. We are kicking off Warzone. And I wrote here match one, but I was like, no, it's match three, dummy. The Rock versus Vader. Rock comes out, pretty much just says it's a non-title match. Stone Cold pulls up into the arena in his truck and taunts The Rock while he plays music. And it's just, I don't know if they actually used proper music while, like, on the actual live or taped version, live version, whatever the hell you want to say it, when it happened here. But, like, yeah, it's just the same beat over and over and over again. And sometimes it fades away. Sometimes it comes back. It was just like, yeah, it was funny.
Well, yeah, one thing I remember from this, too, there's another sign. Remember we talked about that Hunter Hearst Homo sign where these people just go along with for a shitty joke?
Yeah.
I saw one that said the Nation of Constipation.
Love it.
Got him.
I absolutely love it.
That person showed up to the taping with a plan, and he executed his plan to perfection.
You know what? I was really disappointed in 1999 when Jeff Jarrett came out, and he was putting over his match with China, and I believe this was it for No Mercy, for Good Housekeeping Matt. And there was a whole bunch of women that came onto the stage that, like, Jarrett figure four leg locked the entire time. And they called them, like, the Million Woman Militia and stuff like that. But I really wish that they called them the Nation of Ovulation. Because that would have been hilarious. Thank you. Thank you. That's the sound of me patting myself on the back. Yeah, it's just, it's so sad seeing Vader not be the monster that he should be here. Like, just, yeah, it's so sad.
What the hell happens? Fucking Vader just chases... Goldust comes out and interferes.
Goldust comes down and attacks Vader, yes.
Vader chases him off. Vader gets countered out. And then I remember I wrote down here that JR even just straight up said, who cares at this point?
Oh, no. You're skipping the meat of this stew that we're cooking. There's a very beefy suplex by The Rock and into a very embryonic people's elbow. Vader kicks out at two and is so mad, he leaves. Nuts to this match. Rock wins via countout. That is gold, my friend. Just the fact that it's like people's elbow, one, two, mah, screw you, Goldust, where are you? I'm going to eat you now.
Is that what he did?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Oh, my God.
I absolutely loved it.
Just so sick of The Rock shit, he has to go take it out on Goldust.
So good. And then we get one of many, many Rock stare down, Rock and Austin stare downs. And all I can think of when I see them staring down is just one more fight. about
WrestleMania 17.
WrestleMania 17 build main event. Oh god, I just absolutely love it. My way was just so good. It's my favorite video package aside from CM Punk and John Cena Money in the Bank 2011. And yeah, with that, we jump to build up for Ken Shamrock and just, yeah, quick video packages putting over how dominant Ken has been. And yeah, it's nice to see.
Beautiful.
You'd like to take away with match 4?
The light heavyweight tournament match that never came to be. And I think I asked you, right? I think when we were talking the other day, and I asked you if anything was actually said, but it was supposed to be Scott Taylor against Brian Christopher in the semifinals. Brian Christopher never actually made an appearance because when Scott Taylor came out, Kane decided to come out and kick his ass. He killed Scott Taylor. And then Paul Bearer cuts a promo on The Undertaker, and then that's the end. Nothing was actually said. But we assume that Brian Christopher gets a bye in the tournament, eh?
Well, yeah, that's my interpretation because I do know that this leads. Well, no, of course, because it's in your house D-Generation X coming up where they crown the first ever lightweight champion. And it is Brian Christopher versus Taka. That is one of the only things that I remember from.
Just wasn't that. Actually stated. It was just like, well, Scott Taylor got killed by Kane, so what are we supposed to do?
No, and I think you're understanding a little bit. Like, Kane comes out, obviously, like, all the offense, including a top rope draw kick, like, just gets no-sold. I love Kane being like this. It just makes him look like Jason Effin Voorhees. Yeah. And Kane chokeslam Tombstone. Paul Bearer says that it's Taker's fault for all the destruction. Says that he must fight Kane to make it stop. Your life is already a living hell. Arms down, flames up, exit. I love Paul Bearer on the mic. If you don't, you're crazy and there's actually something wrong with you. Match 5. Doesn't actually happen because Jeff Jarrett says that fans don't deserve to see the world's greatest wrestler and that Ahmed isn't proper competition, so he's taken the night off. And he apparently says that Ahmed is the reason I left WWF 2 years ago, and Ahmed calls him chicken shit. Jesus Christ. Chinny Chin Chins comes out and he doesn't have the sergeant hat on just yet. He's still got his commissioner blazer on. And he says that Jeff Jarrett, or he does agree with Jeff Jarrett, and that, but he will have a match at D-Generation X in your house against The Undertaker.
So what I got from this, like, whole segment is Ahmed is in the ring. He's a babyface, right? And he's waiting for Jeff Jarrett. And Jeff Jarrett says Ahmed is not a quality opponent. So yes, Sarge sir. Comes out and says, hey, I have a quality opponent for you, The Undertaker. Now, without actually saying it, I don't know why, but the first thing I thought of was, like, it felt like he was agreeing with Jarrett, saying, you know what? Screw Ahmed. How about The Undertaker instead? You know, where Ahmed is just left in the ring, and he's, like, ignored. He's ignored in the ring. Like, he's just left there. Like, Jeff Jarrett says, hey, I don't want to fight Ahmed. So Sarge is like, okay, you don't have to fight Ahmed.
The easiest solution to this, like, would have, and, like, yeah, he's totally saying that, though. Like, he is saying that in context. Like, oh, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Ahmed is in competition for you.
How about Undertaker?
Undertaker, who is competition. But they could have easily saved that, even if it was just, like, a 3-minute match. Ahmed, since you're already in the ring, here you go. And just feed him somebody. He beats him, 3 minutes. Pearl River Plunge, there you go. Like, that, you could have saved Ahmed that way instead of him just scratching his ass, just being
he just got insulted and then just got you know, pushed aside for the sake of the Undertaker, which you know, it's Undertaker, but at the same time, like, Ahmed got insulted and got nothing.
Maybe he was just so insulted that he was just like, no, nuts to you. I'm just leaving. Like, I'm just leaving the building. I don't need this. In my gear. I'm not even getting changed. I can't be bothered.
Speaking of his gear, holy fuck. Can you imagine how long it takes for him to get ready?
Oh, God.
He got ready just to be insulted.
Those thigh pads, man. I don't... Anyway, we get a Sergeant Slaughter video package. Yeah, lots of video packages here tonight. And then we get the real match 5. Or no, good God, this is match 4. Like, this is actually match 4 because the last two matches didn't even happen. The New Age Outlaws versus the Headbangers. This is non-title match. My biggest question is, why do a tag when the ref's back is turned if you're a heel team? I never understood that. Like, so the ref is distracted with the babyface partner who's on the apron, who's trying to come into the ring. The heel pulls the other guy into the corner. Why would you tag?
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Just
with something like that, I get a kick out of like Edge and Christian are the first team I think of who's done it, where it's like they taunt the crowd where the ref isn't looking, like you said, but they go like they clap their own hands like just to make the noise, right? Like saying, look at that, we didn't actually make a tag, but then the ref thinks that they actually tagged in. So they're just like being dicks to the fans. The ref thinks the tag was made, blah blah blah. It's a small thing. Just like it's a tiny thing just to be a dick. But like you said, they're actually doing like a proper tag, right?
No, I get that. It's just like, I don't know. Like when I was starting out, I was guilty of doing that tag, like that hand clap to indicate like, oh yeah, we did make a tag. But then, I can't remember who pointed out to me. And they were just like, yeah, why? And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, fair point. Because it's almost like the same logic of doing a chair shot when the ref's back is turned and him not immediately turning around and being like, hey, you use a chair.
It's what like, the fuck no, was that noise? Turned.
So I can't hear anything behind me, just what's in front of me. It's wrestling logic. But, yeah, LOD hits the ring and... the Outlaws hightail it. That's really all that can be said about it.
Getting the getaway car and boom.
Yep. Just very quick, simple. Yeah, LOD is going to try and get their tag team titles back. They're pissed. Okay, we get the point. Too bad Headbangers were kind of the sacrificial lambs, but whatever. Recap of Jim Neidhart getting made a fool of. Yeah, don't really need to get into that because just God. There's an NWO makes me puke sign, which just made me laugh. I don't know why. It just tickled me. It's like, but I guess, yeah, 1997. I guess it was kind of running its course, but eh. No, I guess it was still pretty popular at that point. But yeah, I don't know.
Just had the one salty fan in the crowd.
Yeah, it was funny to see. JC in the ring, and he brings out Mark Mero and Sable. Barf. I don't know why I said that. I don't know why. There are a lot of people that are like, my God, Sable. And I don't know what the appeal of her is. I really don't. But Vince loves her, so, yeah. Sable is the star of the show, and you are being covered up by her shadow. Jesus Christ, Jim. Yeah, but it's just true. And, says to Sable, are you a former Intercontinental Champion? Who have you beaten? And then there are massive Sable chants. And I don't know why you were picking on your wife like this. And yeah, at this time, obviously she isn't a former Intercontinental Champion because China hasn't done that yet. So what? Like, yeah, it's very, very weird. You were nothing when I first brought you here. Yeah, okay. And then he proceeds to call Butterball into the ring. And but Butterball is obviously not there. And Jim Cornette says, Butterbean. And it's just, it's so bad. Like, there's an exhibition with, like, Sable holding, like, fighter mitts. And
oh, and before that, Cornette read at the start of the interview where he's, like, unintentionally busting Meryl's balls, talking about, yeah, like you said, how he's living in her shadow or whatever. But Cornette just straight up said, he's like, how do you feel that the fans love Sable, but at this point, they don't care if you drop dead?
Yeah.
Just the way he worded it. He didn't have to say it like that, but he did just because.
But that's a Jim Cornette line. Like, that is what makes Jim Cornette Jim Cornette. Like,
it's freaking great. I loved it.
Lines. But yeah, Meryl punches one. It goes flying. Tells Sable to go pick it up and starts berating her. Says she became a star and modeling other wrestlers' shirts while he was sidelined with an injury. And yeah, I forgot it, that he took some time off. Can't remember what he was injured for, but yeah. He says that Stone Cold owes him money. Yeah, okay, pal. Meryl berates Sable some more, calls her his property, and sends her away. And then Meryl says that he'll knock out Butterbean. And there are massive Sable chants. Ah, yeah. I hate Mark Merrill. I do. I really do. More Survivor Series 1997 footage. You make the call. And yeah, you make the call. You obviously see the bell being rung and Brett's face literally afterwards going, what the fuck's going on, mate? Spitting on Vince, destroying ringside. Yeah, I think he was pretty justified. And now we get to match six. Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Jim Neidhart.
The crowd did not give a shit about this match.
They really didn't. And it was just so funny. Jim no-sells, like, and then starts to beat up Hunter. And a nice backdrop, I will admit to that. Like, he got some pretty good air with that. HBK distracts for Hunter to take over slightly. Jim takes right back over and beels Hunter by his hair. And I honestly can't remember an actual, like, I see girls doing it all the time, beeling by the hair, but I don't ever recall a dude doing that. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with it. The hair's there. Why not? But it was just like, yeah, never actually have ever seen that before. Actually, I think I may have done that to Pride one time. Yeah, maybe. Pride, let me know if you listen to this and let me know if I did that to you. A thumb to the eye by Jim, and he just completely no-sold it. Scoop slam into a shoulder block, power slam. HBK gets caught by Jim trying to interfere. China slides a chair into Hunter. Jim blasts HBK, but then gets blasted by Hunter with the chair. And then, yeah, just a three count. DX beats down Jim Neidhart and spray paints WCW on his back. Well, from the news that we just discovered earlier and we talked about earlier in our news segment, I don't think that's going to be the case. So, yeah.
And I like that JR took a deadly little shot there where he's like, how embarrassing to work there.
Right. Oh, God. Jim goes to attack, but then gets beaten up again. I just love that he's just no-selling everything. He's so angry that he's just like, nothing can stop me except a chair, apparently, for 3 seconds. He gets handcuffed to the top rope. Sergeant Slaughter comes out, and then followed by Shamrock. Cobra clutch to Hunter. The ankle lock to HBK, who is shown tapping like a madman to close out the show. I think that's a decent little thing. And it was just so funny, like, watching Jim, like, grabbing onto like China's pants to like stop her from interfering. And it's just like, oh my God, it's like a kid like going, like wanting to go to like a playground or something. And it's like, no, squirt, like this way, like up this way. Just, yeah.
Just the whole Neidhart thing this week, previous week, it just wasn't good. It just didn't end well. I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense.
It just, it hurt my head.
It's no good.
But yeah, that was our go home show to D-Generation X in your house. Fans, whoever is listening to this, please let us know what you think of this episode. We would love to get your feedback as well. We're going to be trying to get lots of people into this, and like we want to be interactive, so we want to get your guys' opinion too. If you get a chance, go back, watch this episode, let us know what you think of it.
Until we get their opinion, let's hear your opinion, Maverick. Looking back when you were younger, watching it then to watching it now, what did you forget about? What did you remember? What'd you think?
Well, it's funny because looking back on this episode, I don't actually remember anything of it. like I was watching it and I'm like, okay, yeah, all right. And like when I finished it, I'm like, huh, I don't remember anything really like popping out at me that I remembered. So I apologize that I don't have something for that. What I did forget was I did forget about Karate Fighters. Not gonna lie, I forgot about Karate Fighters, and I was super pumped about that. But in a non-funny one, I honestly forgot about the whole like last build for the Marrow Butterbean encounter at D-Generation X. Just fuck me. Like, Anyway, what's something that you stood out to you in this episode?
There's a theme in this episode that I've noticed where it's just, I think mutually we both agree on a lot of things here where just a lot of things weren't executed very well. Like the Neidhart stuff where it's just like him versus Triple H. No one cared at that point. They built it up last week and then some of this week and nobody cared by the time they got there. They took Scott Taylor out of the light heavyweight tournament to get Brian Christopher, like get him a bye to the finals, but they didn't have Brian Christopher talk about it. Like he didn't get any heat for it, you know, like it happened, but Brian Christopher had like nothing to do with it. And what's it called? The Ahmed thing with Jeff Jarrett, you know, where Ahmed is almost like borderline getting buried on the way to get Jeff Jarrett versus Undertaker. And then the Mark Merrill boxing thing, like you said, where it just wasn't good. Just so many things weren't good. They didn't like age well, let alone probably at the time. There were probably a lot of people shaking their head, but just a theme here of just the build up to things just weren't compelling, weren't interesting, weren't successful. Like, holy fuck.
I know that I say I agree a lot, so I'm going to switch it up and say I concur. But, you're absolutely right. And I also feel that watching this episode, I felt like it was just like, okay, you know what? Let's just put a bunch of shit on there. Whatever. Yeah, okay, we'll advance a couple of stories. Okay, who cares if they're actually crap? Let's just get to D-Generation X. Let's get after that. Because this is going to sound really mean. The December pay-per-view doesn't really matter, though. It shouldn't. Like, to me, looking at it, like, if I was booking, like, in the WWF realms of things, and I had their schedule, and I had their pay-per-views, and I had whatever, all of it, Survivor Series, that, like, Survivor Series is pretty much whatever, like, there is going to be a couple of stakes that happens that is going to involve the Royal Rumble. But then everything after Survivor Series is going to be the build to Royal Rumble. Whatever pay-per-view is in December, yes, that is going to help us get there, but it's not going to matter as much. Survivor Series and Royal Rumble is where our money is at. So, yeah, I don't know. That's my opinion on it, but take it with a grain of salt. Everything we don't say is gospel. Please leave us alone. Not actually. Reach out to us. Talk to us. We love hearing from you. But yeah, that is pretty much going to wrap up this episode. Nothing really noteworthy on it. I personally like the end, the closing shot of Michaels tapping out to the ankle lock.
I was going to say, that's like the one thing, the biggest impact as far as building up to the pay-per-view goes, seeing Shawn Michaels tap out to Ken Shamrock leading into their title match. That, you know, makes you think, man, makes you believe, right?
Well, no, totally. And especially if you did watch it at this point and you saw that and you are a massive Ken Shamrock fan and you're pissed off at Shawn Michaels, you're like, oh my God, Ken Shamrock actually has a chance here because Michaels just tapped out. Like, that's incredible. We are going to be doing our very first watch along in your house, D-Generation X. And that is going to be happening this Sunday. Or actually, it is either going to be happening Saturday or Sunday. Be sure to check out our Facebook page. Sorry, I'm getting a little distracted here. Check out our Facebook page to see when we are going to be doing our watch-along episode. And yeah, it is just literally going to be a recording of me and Novak. And we are going to be possibly having a guest or two on, maybe not D-Generation X coming up, but we already do have our first guest for the Royal Rumble 1999, one Mr. Spencer Love, and I'm looking forward to watching that along with him. And we will get to that when we get to it. But for now, Novak, is there anything else you'd like to say, or is that pretty much it on your part?
Yeah, damn right. The pull the lever segment, homie.
Oh, yes, right. Never forget that.
I was looking forward to this one especially, man.
No, absolutely. Let's get to it. Let's get cracking with a lacking.
All right. I just want to make sure I got the point across earlier with the Jim Cornette thing about the interview and the body condom. Just saying. So,
yes.
To anyone who doesn't know what this entails is... I take two of the worst moments from the show and I pitch to Travis which one he thinks I would rather do if I was put in that situation. And we see, you know, if we agree or if we disagree on which one is worse. So he is going to guess. And if he guesses correctly, he'll hear this. And if he gets it incorrect, he'll hear this. All right. So. Travis, with everything that happened in this episode, there's a lot of, you know, piles of shit, but I'm only going to select two. So, do you think I would rather be put on a leash with a metal bra with a ball gag on live TV?
Oh, God.
Or do you think I would rather conduct an interview in a body condom?
Oh, I think you should have switched those. Because oh, man. A body condom. Fucking the metal bra. Oh god. Oh fuck. I'm gonna honestly say that you would do the interview in a body condom because. I was gonna be really upset if I got that lever because I was gonna be upset. Yeah, no, I could definitely see you wanting to do an interview in a body condom rather than dress up as a gimp on national television.
Just... Sanitation, man. Sanitation is important. And even if it gets me over as a character, I will not use a ball gag or be put on a leash. I'm sorry, that's just my preference. No judgment to Dustin Rhodes, but just not my cup of tea, man.
Well, you I don't know if you've ever heard this. We're going to end this on a really funny note, but I don't know if you've actually ever heard this, but apparently Dustin went as far as to going to Vince and saying, I will legit get breast implants.
I've heard that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'm pretty sure, like, every wrestling fan has heard that because it's one of the most, like, bizarre things you could possibly hear of. But to go through that much of a change to try to get over character, it's like, man, you have got dedication. I thought Snitsky dyeing his teeth that gross yellow brown back in the day was bad enough. But, like, getting actual breast implants, man, couldn't imagine.
Yeah, that kid was going places.
Cool. Really was. But we will get to more Gold Dust down the line and more of his ridiculousness. We hope that you enjoyed this week's episode. Good grief. We do 2 weeks, so there you go. But, yeah. We are looking forward to continuing doing this. We are looking forward to the In Your House watch along, and we hope that you will join us for that. And we're not going to be really focusing too much on, like, notes and stuff. We'll write down a couple of things to talk about, but for the most part, we're just sitting there. Enjoy the show with us. And yeah, until then, take care of yourselves, be safe out there, and yeah, until next time, see you then.
Goodbye.